Welcome into Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz, voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner all here with you. K-State smashes Kansas, not surprising at all. And to me, the game said a lot more about Kansas than it did K-State. Just how dreadful the Jayhawks program is right now. Just how dreadful the coaching is for Kansas right now. But you'll definitely take the 55-14 win. K-State all alone now in first place in the Big 12 with Iowa State's loss. Life is pretty good here in Manhattan as K-State heads into a game against West Virginia. We also got the men's basketball schedule today, so we are going to talk about that with head coach of the Wildcats, Bruce Weber, in hour two of Wildcat Insider here today. And as always, to get in touch with us, just tweet me at JL Kurtz or tweet the game KMAN. A lot of ways to get in touch with us. You can call the show at 537-1350 as well. But I say this game speaks more to Kansas than it does K-State simply because outside of three drives in the second half, which were great for K-State offensively and I think provide you some signs of hope, it was pretty much what K-State has been under Will Howard so far, and all the Wildcats had to do basically was just show up and accept everything being handed to them by Kansas with some bonehead decisions to continue kicking the ball to Phillip Brooks with a muff punt, with a missed field goal, with a fourth and one that doesn't turn into a conversion, with a pick six. I mean, it was really a comedy of errors from Kansas throughout that game.
It was certainly that, no question about it. And I think when you really get down to the brass tacks of it, I think you saw K-State do some awfully good things on this particular day. You talk about the special teams, that's a no-brainer. But I want to focus in on what they did in the third quarter because the coach challenged them at halftime, and I think we saw a different offensive football team in the third quarter. That excites me too. Phillip had a great day, but it wasn't just Phillip. If you go back and look at the tape, and I'm sure you have and many others listening have, the blocking was superb for Phillip Brooks. It's almost breathtaking to think about 189 punt return yards in this day and age of college football, more or less two taken back to the house at 55 and 52 yards. That's astonishing. A lot of these kids now are averaging 3, 4, 5, 6 yards per return. You just do not see a lot of returns in the college game today. So front page news, that's for sure.
Well, it is, and that's where I, I don't want to take anything away from Phillip Brooks. I don't want to take anything away from the guys on the return unit. It's unbelievable that the ball continued to be. I mean, Phillip takes one back to the house, and not only is that one kicked to him with 8 seconds left in the first half, but there's another one later in the game that damn near goes to the house also, and it's like, what is happening
there?
And it
was roughly 40-ish? Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I know Les said after the game they were telling the punter to hit it away from him and it just wasn't happening. But I don't know what to think about anything that he tells you about what is actually going on there. But I don't understand how that continued to happen. The 189 yards that Phillip Brooks had, obviously it's a K-State record and it's a phenomenal day for him. If you want to put it in perspective, the best way that I think you can, it's that today, I went and checked today, after, well, I guess everyone's played differing amounts of games, but 5, 6 games for everybody in the country, no team has 189 return yards.
Yeah,
no team.
Yeah.
It was like 176 was second in the country, and that's Oklahoma. Phillip Brooks by himself on one day outdid the entire country in punt return yards.
Yeah.
Like that's, and it's a combination of how great K-State special teams are with how bad the coaching and special teams are at Kansas.
Well, let's stay with the K-State side of it for a moment. I think it's obvious that this wasn't just one day. This has been going on here for a long, long time with special teams excellence. And I think a lot of people over the last, let's just say from an hour or so after the game till today, it's amazing, you know, the special teams you and some of the things they're being called and the numbers that have been thrown out there. And then on top of that, you have a guy who excelled in special teams here, have that kind of night on Sunday Night Football in Tyler Lockett, and Byron Pringle just hours before that with a return for a score. So K-State got enough pub, or a lot of good pub, let's put it that way. I don't know if there's never, ever enough, but it was awfully good all around the country this weekend. And, man, you got to love that. Take that, baby, every time.
Well, you're right. I mean, it dovetailed perfectly into Yeah, what we saw from from Pringle and then Tyler Lockett, obviously, is a guy who's contributed quite a bit to that too. And it's great, man. I mean, they're awesome. They found different ways to do it. I mean, it's not just a one-trick pony. It's not just returns. It's not just blocks. I mean, they've done it all. They have four block kicks this year. They have the two return touchdowns now from Phillip Brooks. Last year, it was all the return touchdowns at the end of the year from Josh Youngblood. I mean, they're pretty diverse in what they can do to hurt you on special teams, and there's no doubt that that's a huge part of what they do right now. I mean, the defense and the special teams are both very good. I guess I would say the special teams are excellent. The defense is good, and the offense is okay. Mm-hmm. And right now, that's been enough to get you 4-0 in first place in the Big 12.
Yeah, with a long way to go and some very tough games coming, certainly, and starting with West Virginia. You know, we said last week on the show, at least I did, wondering out loud, how hard will it be for them to go to Lubbock? Well, it turned out to be too hard. You know, it was a tie game going to the fourth quarter. Tech won the game, 34-27. I know we'll talk about it more later, but I look at it like K-State will have a real challenge this weekend because West Virginia, despite what happened in Lubbock, Texas, is a pretty good defensive team, and especially at home. And right now, K-State, you know, at times struggles offensively. How well will K-State play defensively? And if you remember to a year ago, this may be the biggest key. Of all the games K-State played last year, the one team that took virtually all of their special teams away was West Virginia. I expect them to try to do that again. Well, I don't think they will kick it anywhere near anybody. Yeah, I mean, do you?
No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
No.
I would trust that they will have more success and more consistency in doing that than what Les Miles did, for sure. You know, I mean, you hope that the defense continues to do what they do. West Virginia's offense hasn't been very, you know, I mean, Letty Brown's been good, but they're not particularly impressive there. And I do think, I mean, K-State's defense just kind of did what they did. There were a couple of drives there for Kansas, but basically they mowed them down. And the defensive backs in the pass rush continue to be really, really good.
Well, I think that's the thing. You've got, and I know A.J. was injured in the game, and you hope that he's available, but he's playing at such a high level at nickel, and then you've got Jerron at one of the safety spots. The other guys, I think we'd be not being as totally honest as we need to be by looking at guys like Ross Elder, Echo Boydho, Justin Gardner, guys like that, and saying, did anybody expect those guys to be playing like this? And they haven't been perfect, but they've been pretty darn good. And it's been one of the great stories of the year from my perspective. I really appreciate those guys and how well they're being coached and how well they've responded. I mean, Echo's like 167 pounds, man. And he really fights and competes. And Justin, we saw the play that he made. A lot of guys, and they played a ton of guys again. And I think you just see more and more guys, you know, kind of starting to come out now that T.J. Smith has been injured, and it's a long-term deal. And so in comes Amaris Brown, and he's probably not T.J., let's be honest. And yet the guy's really good as a special teams player. He's a freshman fitting in now in the secondary. And I just think these guys have done a real nice job of coaching them up and getting them into that next man up routine, and everybody's responding.
Yeah, I mean, it's not shocking to me that the defensive backs are good, because last year it seemed like the defensive backs were pretty good when they weren't the most talented group in the world.
And sure.
That, you know, you maintain the two guys on the staff that were in charge of that, elevated them both, mm-hmm. not just maintained, but elevated them both in their roles on the coaching staff, and that's Van Malone and Joe Klanderman.
Yeah, well, and both of those guys have been doing this, you know, Van certainly a little bit longer than Joe, but both at a really high level. Personally, I think both of those guys are what I would describe as player-friendly coaches, and yet they're tough and demanding and all of those kind of things. And I got to tip my cap to Joe. I was one of those that was so disappointed when Scotty was leaving, understood it, but was really disappointed. And I've said this before, but when Coach Kleiman told me what he told me about Joe, I quit worrying about it because I think he knew he was ready. He knew he was good enough and was going to do a really good job, and I think it's played out that way so far.
Yeah, the bottom line is the defense and special teams are playing well enough right now to give the offense a chance to come around.
Yeah.
And I think you hope what winds up happening is that the offense is able to basically, I would just say, extrapolate out the Kansas game into the rest of the season. The first half, it was the defense and special teams doing enough to let the offense get to a point where it finally came around. And then in the third quarter, they just exploded, and that's when the game totally turned into a laugher. That's what you hope for the season here. Like, defense and special teams have helped win them the TCU game, the Kansas game. We'll see what happens at West Virginia. And then when the schedule gets really hard in the back part of the schedule here, can the offense develop into something enough that can actually get you to a Big 12 championship game? Because right now, I mean, it's so tangible, the impact that special teams and defense are having. I mean, I went through and looked at, if you take the Kansas game, I would say special teams basically gave you 17 points because two of the returns went for scores, another one set up a field goal. And you go back to the TCU game, you block a field goal, that takes 3 points off the board. Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Arkansas State, all three block punts led to touchdowns. So you add all that up, divide it by the five games there, you're getting an extra 8 points per game from special teams. And then the defense has scored you 14 points the last 2 weeks.
Well, that's the other real big factor, to be perfectly honest about it, because when you put all of that together, it does maybe cover up a few warts as you get a true freshman quarterback integrated into this. You know, you look at Will's numbers, and I don't know what you thought overall of his performance, but if you look at the overall numbers where he goes 17 of 24 for just a skosh over 240 yards or what have you, I think you'd probably take something similar to that about every week against what lies ahead, wouldn't you? I know I would.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he will do that, but I'm not going to stand here and say I don't think he's capable either, because I think he could do that, you know? I think there are a lot of factors that go in that. I'll just say it this way. Based on what you just said, if you can give me 6-8 points from the defense or special teams up and above and beyond what they're, you know, what most teams get, I'll take my chances.
And that's how that equation balances out, right? Yeah. On the wins, even if the offense is lagging behind. But there's plenty of reason to be excited about what we saw from the offense in the third quarter, and I do want to talk about that as the show moves on today. Again, you can get in touch with us at JL Kurtz on Twitter, at the game KMAN. On Twitter, we got the basketball schedule, the men's basketball schedule. We'll get you up to speed on that coming up next here on Wildcat Insider. All right, you just heard Mitch use it during the game sports update there, but we have now the full men's basketball schedule. That's really the only thing that's not official on this is the game. If Butler doesn't have an actual day or time or TV or any of that, but K-State will be playing at Butler, so we know that that's coming up, but it's a lot of home games here. The only road game in non-conference play will be that game at Butler. Everything else is at home, and K-State is scheduled 26 of 27 games allowed by the NCAA this year. So I guess the other note that I would throw in here is Big 12 play will start fairly early. Let's see. The first game is December 19th, K-State will play, or December 15th, rather. K-State will play at Iowa State, and then December 19th, they play Baylor before a couple other non-conference games, and then in earnest, the conference schedule really starts on January 2nd.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the one that people have been talking about. Everybody will play a couple of conference games in December. Iowa State, I think, probably when you see the preseason coaches poll that should come out here in the next day or two, excuse me, it would be my opinion that I think Iowa State, K-State, TCU could be that, you know, 8, 9, 10 grouping of teams. So, but then, then you come back and play maybe the team that I'll be surprised, honestly, if Baylor isn't picked to be the preseason conference champion. Won't you? I get KU's won it, but
I would pick Kansas.
I understand.
Just because of history and
but
Bill
I think
Self
from a
that.
National perspective, I think most of the national guys, even if they're all wrong, will probably go and say, I think Baylor's the team to beat in the Big 12.
Well, there definitely is. I think there's always a tendency to get fatigued over a team winning as much as Kansas has, right?
Truly.
So
yeah.
You want to rush to crown somebody else, and if there is another option there, you're going to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that. I think, you know, I would anticipate K-State is going to be last. I did see that CBS Sports, for instance, did a poll of all their panel of experts, and they all had K-State pick last in the Big 12. So I would just prepare yourself for that. I think you are going to see that.
Well, more than likely, yeah. And excuse me, we were talking just a moment ago off air. that, you know, K-State has just the one senior, and that's Mike McGurl. And Mike is K-State's returning leading scorer. And we're talking about 6.9 points per game. So, yeah, I think the expectations, you can sit there and talk about how highly rated the recruiting class was, but I don't know that the coaches will give much credence to that at this point. I think you kind of have to go out and prove that a little bit. We'll see, but I anticipate them being in the bottom couple for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have not, to be honest with you, like, just gone through with a, you know, fine-tooth comb to look at the Iowa State roster and TCU, right, and like determine who I really think would be last in the league. But I think there's obviously a very compelling argument to pick K-State last in the league just based on returning production. Mm-hmm. On top of that, it is a year that is difficult to be a young team, to be this young. I mean, to have this many new faces on your roster. It's not a great year to be trying to break in a new head coach. Like, any of those things make, sure, life difficult.
Agreed.
Like, look at Baylor right now in football. I mean, I think they're having a lot of trouble because they were breaking in a new coach and a bunch of new players, particularly on the defensive side of the ball and the new system and all that. And COVID makes that exponentially more difficult.
COVID's hit them worse than anybody in the Big 12.
Yes.
Pardon me. And what have they played now? Three games? I think that's right.
Three or four. Yeah.
We're getting close to November 1st, bud.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
So anyway, point being there, like, that's, I think K-State in a different kind of a way is in a similar sort of a boat there.
Oh, yeah.
So I can understand, you know, why the expectations are going to be low, but the upside to that is, hey, I mean, just go play. You can go be pretty free and loose because the expectations are not going to be very high for this team.
Sure. And I do think that I'll be anxious when we have Coach Weber on next hour to see what he might say about the Big 12, because I do think there are a lot of people that are looking at the Big 12 and saying, boy, there's another really good group of young players coming into the league in this one particular stretch here, this one season, whether it's the Cunningham kid at Oklahoma State or the, you know, the couple of guys that KU has, or I mean even Baylor. What can we say about Baylor other than you know this? They've got a lot of people back. They're going to have a transfer or two that will make an impact, and that is factual. We know that Huggs will have a team with a big fella in the middle, and they will, and that Tech will be really talented, in including their highest rated recruit ever, which says a lot because they've had a lottery pick in the last 2 years. So the upper part of the league could be real good.
What have you heard as far as K-State basketball practice and who may be standing out?
Well, I think probably with this group, and if you're talking about the newcomers, I think you probably have to start with Nigel Pack. Real, true, legitimate point guard. Really understands and knows the game. He can shoot it really, really well. Good distributor and passer, too. I think they're really excited about Davion and what he's going to be at some point. I think you'll really like him when you see him because he's 7 foot and has pretty good hands and feet, and he can move. But the other guy is, you know, we'll see. I think I love Selton so far. He's just really a terrific athlete. He's a bulldog getting to the rim. He can shoot it a little bit. I think he has a chance to be a plus defender, a real plus-plus defender, actually. So I think you would probably start with those three guys for sure. No question about that.
What do you think of where the returner is at from that freshman class last year? Because it feels to me like they're a bit overlooked here because there is a lot of excitement about the,
sure,
the freshmen.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year we were pretty excited about the freshman class and Dejuan Gordon in particular. But now it's, you know, I mean, it's a tendency of everybody, right? The bright, shiny new object is the new class here.
Of course.
And last year those guys took some, you know, they took some knocks. They went through some struggles. And feels to me like there just has not been a lot of conversation about, you know, Dejuan Gordon, Montavious Murphy, and Antonio Gordon.
And let's be honest, I think it's a really good question, John, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think what I would say is this, a couple of two or three different thoughts here. One, if you really go back and look at last year and see the segments where K-State played its best basketball, Montavious Murphy was on the floor. Simply stated. I believe, too, that K-State will not be what they feel like they have the chance to be this year in terms of being a good quality and improving kind of team that people will worry about in the future if Dejuan isn't a big part of this. He's athletic. He has worked on his shot. I believe it is better. He's stronger. Where he needs to be yet? Maybe not quite, but you know, good quality improvement there. And I, you know, I think he's a young pup too, but all those other young kids look towards him, I think. And that's a good thing. So those two guys, Montavious and Dejuan, I think will play pivotal roles. Antonio, I'm a little bit up in the air on him just because he had to set out for a little bit, but I think he's going to be okay. You know, I think we all know he has talent. But he still, frankly, in my opinion, has to be more consistent on both ends of the floor. Still probably needs to be a little bit stronger. But, man, I like Montavious Murphy for the first time I saw him, and Dejuan too, and I do think they're developing. They're not at the apex of where they're going to be yet, right. but they've made strides for sure.
But I like what you say about, like, if the team is going to pull themselves out of the hole that they're in right now, it's going to take, for sure. I mean, I would say both Dejuan and Montavious Murphy
for sure.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like Dejuan is the top of that list, but some combination of both of those two guys developing a lot is going to have to happen.
And you think about, in the last 4 or 5 minutes in our conversation here, there are even a couple of other guys that I think are going to help that we haven't even mentioned. Casey Eziegu is an example. I think will probably be the five man to start the year. He's tough. You'll like him. He plays hard. He can defend. I think he's going to get a lot of putbacks. He's going to get a lot of rebounds. He's just going to play with an edge. I just really like him a lot. I think he competes. So I would start with him. You know, where do you go from that? You know, who knows whether it's – I like Siri a lot too. You know, he's long. He can shoot it. But again, needs to be stronger. He is just a freshman. Expect ups and downs. But I think some of those ups will be pretty good.
And those are names, yes, that, again, are below the fold, so to speak, in the recruiting class, so we don't talk about quite as much. But you're going to have to get contributions from basically all these guys.
Oh, yeah.
That we've talked about based on the holes that were there in the roster. All right, we got an update today on the Big 12 teleconference on A.J. Parker. Some injury news there if you're worried about what's happened to K-State's nickel. We'll play you that audio coming up next here on Wildcat Insider. We got an update from Chris Klieman today on the Big 12 teleconference about A.J. Parker. He left the Kansas game with what looked like an ankle injury. I will say it's mostly good news here. I think it's easy to go to a bad place when you see that happen with A.J. because he is such an impactful player, and he got hurt against Kansas last year in an ankle injury that was very serious, but sounds like Klieman does not believe that to be the case this time around.
It was an ankle injury, but we don't believe it to be severe, and so we'll kind of see how he progresses this week. But our trainers kind of said it was more kind of day-to-day, so we'll see. Obviously, we get together with the guys and have a short practice this evening, so I'll learn a little bit more. But we're feel pretty good that it's not going to be a long-term injury.
Very good to hear. I mean, A.J. Parker's been awesome, especially since moving from corner to nickel.
Mm-hmm.
All those defensive backs have been great, and I think I guess they are starting to get thinner depth-wise there, especially when finding out about T.J. Smith. But, like, you know, defensive backfield in general, that's been about as deep and effective a position group as there is on the roster. So if you do have to go without A.J. for a week, yeah, I mean, look, the next 2 weeks are pretty big games, so you hate to even say it. But if you're going to have to get by without him for a week or two, there are worse spots that you could be doing that at.
Yeah, and I think you have a lot of guys that are used to multiple positions now, too, which helps. Whether we're talking a freshman like Will Jones, a guy that's been in the system a little bit longer, in Wayne Jones, you know, I mean, there are other guys, you know, kind of stepping up too. I mentioned Demaris Brown a moment ago. Hunter Henry is starting to kind of make his way, and I think they feel like he's going to be an impactful player going forward. Young man who started his career at Rice but maintained his red shirt. So 4 years to play coming in here. So yeah, young in spots, yes, if need be. But I think guys that have learned quickly and are making headway, and that's good.
I guess the other thing I would say, too, and I don't, this is one of those knock on wood kind of things, but West Virginia is not the most explosive passing game in the league right now. So if he's not playing on Saturday, I mean, sure. West Virginia's real offense has been the fact that they have such a good ground game going with Letty Brown. It has not been that they're throwing it all over the place.
Here's the thing, and I agree with that 100%. But for me, the best part is I think, you know, and Letty Brown may have 150 yards. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But you don't have to worry about Letty Brown and a running quarterback in Max Duggan. That's significant in my mind, okay? Deggy has his strengths, but it's mostly what I'll describe in the dink and dunk passing kind of thing. And they're not a real – I mean, they'll try to stretch you occasionally, but they're more kind of methodically move it down and hope if there's explosion there, it's going to be probably more with Letty Brown. Or if they get a long pass play, it's going to be a 15-yard screen that's turned into a 70-yard play, right? At least that's the way I see it. The deal with them, of course, is with their defense because, as I said earlier, you know they gave up some the other night in Lubbock against Columbia, who was really pretty good again for Tech. But their defense with those Stills boys, Jeffrey Pooler up front, that they can be a handful at times. And they've got some really talented guys in that mid-level and back level of their defense too.
They're definitely solid.
They're sixth nationally, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, definitely across the board. Like I'd say a half tick better than what they were last year. Is that fair for West Virginia right now?
Probably so, or maybe a little bit more than that, just because they've been in the system a little bit longer. And you know, some of these names you may know, but they have a young man who plays their spur position, Tyke Smith, who they love. He was a freshman All-American last year. Really a playmaking guy. Nick Troy Fortune has come along and has been better. You know, their safeties are decent. So, yeah, I think defensively that's where they make their hay, to be perfectly blunt. If they have, from my perspective, a weakness, I think Evan Staley, their field goal guy, is not a real long-distance guy. And then offensively, like you say, they're solid, but not just worry you to death explosive. Let's put it that way.
Which is what I felt watching Jarrett Deggy at the end of last year when he really took off. I thought they were headed toward being a much more explosive offense.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't really worked out like that. And West Virginia did play a light-ish Big 12 schedule, you know, to this point in the year and are only 3-2.
Well, and here's the – now I throw the feather in the soup, so to speak, okay? They've beaten K-State 4 straight times.
Well, they haven't, and Vegas has them as a 3.5-point favorite. So, yeah. I say all of this. There's a lot of things on paper that don't scare you all that much about the game, really. But Vegas thinks they're a favorite. This has been a thorn in K-State's side. So
yes.
The last win that K-State had was the 2015 game with the Morgan Burns kickoff return. You know, I mean, in that game, I know Dana Holgorsen after the game was wondering how exactly the heck that happened. I mean, you stole that one from them. So really, it's been since 2014 that you had a really commanding performance against West Virginia. For whatever reason, they have just been really difficult for K-State to knock off.
The game in West Virginia, at West Virginia, was it two times ago that was like 16-14?
Yeah, I mean, there
K-State
was,
had some chances.
Byron Pringle dropped a touchdown in the end zone early that would have probably put the, you know, put the back-breaking score in there. I know I remember that one from 2016.
Yeah.
2018, I feel like, was a blowout. So, yeah, that had to be it, 2016.
Yeah, because the last time we were there, it was not all that close. And I do think this one will be close. I think it will be hotly contested. I think if K-State, like we said before, if they can do a couple things in special teams and run that football and have some balance, they'll have a shot. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, Mitch just showed me 17-16 was the final in that game.
West Virginia scored 14 in that fourth quarter to come back and win.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Matthew McCrane had a missed field goal, right?
That's right.
In that game also?
I think so.
A lot of chances.
Right at the end.
A lot of chances. We'll look around the Big 12 and what else happened this weekend coming up next. Again, if you want to join the show, 537-1350 here on Wildcat Insider. Congratulations to my guy, Taylor Bratz.
There you go.
He had another child today, Seen a picture of it on Twitter. You can follow him at SpedBrat on Twitter. But says, brought in a special cat today, Briley Owen Brat. Mom, baby, and sisters all doing great. Already had his first team Zoom meeting, and he has been looking at his future home all day, as it's a picture of Bill Snyder Family Stadium in the background. So very nice. Awesome stuff there, man. Congrats to Taylor, who I know not only is very excited about that, but if there's one guy within the program that winning the Sunflower Showdown means more to than Taylor, I'm not sure who it is, because and the guy loves Kansas.
He'd be the first to tell you it was the final was 55-14, but in his eye, it's 33-6. Number of Kansas players on the K-State 2 deep,
yes,
as opposed to the other.
Yes.
That means a lot to him, and congratulations, Taylor. And I think in a world where we use the phrase one of a kind maybe too much, he literally is one of a kind.
Taylor Brad is one of a kind.
One of a kind.
I thought it was awesome, the video that they put out after the game of giving out like all the different like hammers that they give out at the end of the game. And, and Taylor got one of those and got to go to the center of the cat head in the locker room and like hold it above everybody. It was awesome.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that quite a bit.
That was good work by Emily Starkey and her group too. That was really well done in the locker room. I love my job, love what I do. I would have liked to have been down there for just a couple of minutes to see part of that. That would have been fun.
Yeah, that was very cool. I always enjoy the little snippets of access that we get from that kind of thing in the locker room. So Iowa State loses to Oklahoma State, and it allowed me the opportunity to point out that it's another year of very inflated expectations for Iowa State, and here they sit halfway through the season just barely above 500. So very typical of Iowa State. Now, I saw a good chunk of Iowa State, Oklahoma State as it was happening, as I was finishing up some work. I went back and watched like an extended highlight of that game. And I know it was a 3-point game. It came down to an onside kick, and Iowa State did miss a couple of field goals. It felt to me like watching the game, Oklahoma State was a decidedly better team. I mean, I think I came away feeling pretty convicted in the thought that I had going into the game, which is that Oklahoma State is the class of the league, and Iowa State is a step behind that. I feel pretty much that way after watching that game play out.
I think really the real key was Spencer Sanders being back. And if you really pin me to the wall, I think Oklahoma State's defense is just a little bit better than Iowa State's. I may be wrong, but that's the way I see it. And I mean, I'm looking at the numbers here, and Sanders was 20 of 29 for 235 yards. He's got a terrific talent there in Tylan Wallace to throw to, but Chuba went for 139. That pretty much offsets Breece Hall's 185 for Iowa State. So pretty good football game, but I'm like you. I expected it to be kind of like that, and I expected Oklahoma State to find a way to win, and they did.
And I think with Spencer Sanders, as much about his legs as it is about his arm. Like he made some plays on third down in particular. It felt like a couple of times where everything breaks down and he can just take off and run. And I don't think Oklahoma State was really getting that with Shane Illingworth nearly as much as they are with Spencer Sanders.
Yeah, and he's done a good job. That's a good point, John. But that threat to run makes those other guys around him even more dangerous from my perspective, because Sanders can take one, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards, boom, just like that.
Yeah, and he's still flawed. Like I don't think he's
100%
perfect, yeah.
No, and he's still developing as a thrower, probably.
But I think he definitely makes them better. His combination of legs and experience, he makes them better. I don't think Oklahoma State is a college football playoff kind of a team. I don't come out of that game thinking that the Big 12 really has somebody that's a college football playoff sort of a team, but I do think that Oklahoma State is deservedly so considered by most now the class of the league.
But what they do have, however, a lot of experience. If you look at that defense, some of those guys have been 3- and 4-year starters. It's hard to beat that.
Yeah.
Until next year, of course.
I mean, start peeking ahead here. Like next week, not this Saturday, but next Saturday could be a very fun game. If Oklahoma State takes care of business against Texas and K-State takes care of business against West Virginia.
That's why you got your sick day pick, by the way, from TV today.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. We will not know the kickoff time until next week, next Sunday, I imagine, like this Sunday, however you want to consider that. when exactly K-State and Oklahoma State will kick off. It could be either 11 a.m. on ABC or 3 o'clock on Fox, neither of which are bad options, by the way.
Oh, good options. And I think it'd be a terrific game. It's going to be a terrific game either way, I think. But I think that's the deal. You've got Oklahoma State playing host to Texas this weekend. You've got K-State playing at West Virginia. I think those folks want to see how those games play out, and then they'll decide.
And I think, you know, I've heard some grumbling about why is it not going to be a night game. I think, one, I would point out, like, night games, when you can't have the entire crowd there, loses some of the luster to me, like in COVID times. Mm-hmm. Also, I would bet that the Big 12 didn't want to have its best game going up against Clemson and Notre Dame, which is going to be taking place in South Bend at 6 o'clock.
That'll be a good one.
On NBC that night. So that could be a part of it as well. So I'm not too beat up about it not being a night game, even though it would have been cool. All right, we'll come back, talk some more K-State football. K-State dominates Kansas. Programs are pretty far apart right now. It's Wildcat Insider.